accession number 23787, Reel 2.
Major Dillon, Reel 2. Now, off tape, you just recalled that Sergeant George Gristock, you remember him at Bourton quite well. Could you tell us a bit about Gristock?
He was a ex-regular cavalryman, I think 9th Lancers, who had fallen foul of his regiment and had re-enlisted in the Royal Norfolk Regiment and been promoted sergeant. And because of being a cavalryman, he was in charge of the few horses we had. And I remember as a young subaltern going down to see if it was possible to have a horse for a ride, and he was obviously trying to take the piss out of a young officer, and he said, "Well, of course, sir, I've got a very nice horse here, but I'm afraid I haven't got a saddle for him at the moment because it's being repaired, but I could strap a blanket right. You can ride bareback, can't you, sir? They teach you that, don't they, sir?" I said, "Oh, of course, sergeant. Yeah, well, wait, the bloody thing took off like..." I managed to remain on board, so I hope I made my number with Sergeant Gristock. But that was the sort of thing they did to a young officer.
Now, what about at Bourton? How did you get on with... I presume you were given a platoon. Which company were you in?
Oh, God, no.
Was it Barclay's company or...?
No, it was... Barclay was A company. I was B company. John Henry Elwes, who was Barclay's great chum.
And what do you remember of John Henry Elwes?
John, great games player, a bit of a drinker, a very good friend as a company commander. He was an outstanding chap.
He made you welcome as a soldier.
Very, very welcome, yeah.
And what about your platoon? How did you settle in with your platoon in
I can hardly... Well, it was very sketchy. They were very thin on the ground when I joined, and then suddenly it was full up with reservists. They started calling reservists up to bring us up strength. And they were all rather fat, rather disagreeable old chaps who were rather fed up with being called up, I think. I've got very vague memories about this.
You weren't impressed by them then, the reservists?
Well, some of them were not, one felt they were not to be a father, you know. But they were all old sweats from India. They'd all done 7 years in India and that sort of thing.
And how did they react to you as a sort of 19, 20-year-old?
Well, in those days, there was this kind of... It doesn't exist today. This gulf between officers and men. There was, there's no doubt about it. And there was very little rapport then, as there is now, and was during the war. I mean, during the war, you became much closer to your men, of course.
But basically, you didn't get to know them.
No, the only thing you did was play football. You were encouraged to play football against them, and I was reasonably good at it. And all they wanted to do was try and break your collarbone or kick your shins in. And so you had... I could do that just as well as you can. Here it comes, thump. You know, you had to stand up on the football field. You had to go for them. They didn't mind. Now, you see, on the football field, rank was dropped. They could, if you were centre half and he was centre forward, there was nothing to do with, he's a fucking officer or something. Anyway.
What about the sort of training you were doing at Bourton? Do you recall that at all, as a unit?
Mostly route marches. I remember endless marching.
What were the marches like?
Well, unfortunately, I was fit, but by God, they went on and on, miles and miles. One never sees today a battalion on the line of march, you know, like 600 men, tramp, tramp, boots, boots, marching up and down.
Did you have a band?
Yes. The band always went down to the station to any draft, like recruits or reservists coming, was always met at the station by the band and marched up to the...
Would they play on the route marches or...?
What they would do was would come up, there would be, the drums would normally come as opposed to the band, and then probably the band would come out in a truck the last 5 miles and march it in.
Was it a proper routine, sense of, you know, 10 minutes every hour?
Yes, that was very, very strict, and water discipline. That's what they were trying to teach you.
What was water discipline? Can you just explain?
You had a full water bottle. You weren't allowed to drink unless, more or less, told to. You could drink for it, but then they would check your water bottles to see there was still water in it. That sort of thing.
So a lot of route marching, and you don't ruin much else when you're born.
Route marching and musketry, and a bit of sort of minor tactics on the heath, nothing very much. Sort of platoon schemes. And no live, it was all waving a red flag and a rattle and that sort of thing.
Do you remember who your platoon sergeant was? I mean, because that's quite important to a young... I mean, if you don't remember his name, you got on with him.
I honestly can't remember. I remember Cockaday was a company sergeant major. I can't remember the platoon sergeant.
So, how long were you at Borden? You got there in January.
We went to France in September.
So you were there until...
Yes.
Do you remember the outbreak of war? You know, the sort of... What it was like when you heard, did you hear the radio broadcast?
Yes. I think by then it was just inevitable. We were just, it didn't cause any surprise at all, really. And all I can remember, Sergeant Smalls, the mess sergeant, we were told we were going to, in train, to go down to, Southampton. Yes, it was Southampton. Have a sack ration. And a bottle of beer, Courage's Light Ale. And I remember this was after breakfast getting it, and he said, I think so, we'd all been needing a little of that quite shortly, which was a sort of ominous remark.
What do you remember of the trip out to France? You were,
it was totally uneventful.
Late September, was it?
Late September, it was overnight, and we then got in a train and went to Le Mans. There was a sort of big transit camp there. And I was sent. I was sent as a billeting party. I forget the name of wherever the village was. With who was it? An NCO. I forget his name. With these bits of blue paper, you know, it said 10 men or whatever, or 4 horses or 10 men or something. And I thought the farmers would resent this not a bit because they got paid. They said, "Please come. I can take 10 men. I can take 10 men." And everywhere you got, they produced a bottle of Calvados. By the time the battalion got it, I was absolutely speechless.
Now, which area were you billeted in? You don't remember the village?
Right, near Le Mans. I can't remember.
And what were your billets like?
Oh, God. It was a farmhouse. It was all right. Farmhouse. No, nothing.
And what were you doing for the first period? What do you remember of that?
We moved up towards the Belgian frontier. We were sort of digging, and because they said it was going to rain in the winter, we had to build breastworks. I can remember doing that. But now it's coming winter. It's getting autumn, winter, and raining. And
were you still, you want this, you see, move from Le Mans to...
Up to, yeah, to, what was the name of the village? Near Lille, Rumigy, I think it was.
And what about the building breastworks? What do you remember of the sort of defences you put up?
Totally useless, really. But, I mean, there were sort of hurdles and sods of earth and brushwood, and it was in order to raise it up as opposed to being down in the ground, which was full of water. And all of a sudden, I can remember saying, I don't think this effing tittage will do much good. But anyway.
And how were the men settling in?
They seemed quite happy. The thing is, the soldier of those days was totally, appeared to be quite unemotional. Totally accepted whatever the day brought.
Were there any problems with drinking? With not used to wine?
Nothing. Not really, I don't think. No, I don't think. Nothing special, I don't think.
So what was day-to-day life for you in that period?
A certain amount of sport. We had a shotgun. We used to go out pigeon shooting and that sort of thing. And it was really rather boring. I suppose one remembers.
How did you get on with the French?
All right. Except one realised that the French army wasn't any good. I remember when we relieved somewhere, when we was up towards the frontier, that Maginot Line thing, we relieved a French platoon, or my platoon did. And I said, can I look, my broken French, I'd like to look at your rifle. It's different from ours, and it was full of grease. They're all full of grease, and I said, look, there, you can't use a rifle like that. It just hadn't been cleaned since coming out of the store. Oh, we're not going to use them, they said. I got this. It suddenly rang a bell. Well, we're not going to fight. We're not going to use our rifles. What's the point of cleaning them? What's the point of taking the grease out? So that was a sort of, at platoon level, that was. It rang a sort of bell.
What about your time in the Maginot Line? I forgot the name of the village you were at, but...
No, I wasn't. I went back from... My career ended shortly after that when I got involved in this traffic accident in a...
Was that while you were moving up into the line or shortly afterwards?
Before. And was carted off on a stretcher, and that was the end of my time in with a broken leg.
What happened? What about the... What happened in the accident?
Well, I was driving in this a taxi, I think it was, if I remember, on a very nasty road. And I remember very little about it, except waking up in the hospital with a broken leg.
Were you driving? Or
no, I wasn't.
How badly broken was it?
Fairly. I had to be, you know, pulled that thing. And anyway, I was evacuated back to England. Furiously, you know, thinking, God, how awful.
And when was would this be?
This was Feb, March. And then when I recovered, I remember going back.
Where did you stay in England? You know, during your recovery, were you back home or were you?
Back home on leave at Burnham Market, and then rejoined the depot. And as soon as I was fit, tried to with another chap, tried to get back to the battalion. I remember it was the date was the. April, May, I was past fit then, and we tried to get across to France and get back. Thank God they stopped us. A lot of chaps were trying to do this. One chap, Carol Gibbons, Captain Gibbons, he'd also had an injury. He got across and was taken prisoner. We'd have probably been taken prisoner. We wouldn't know where the battalion was. Because it was by then chaos in France. So they stopped. And there was no further. Nobody was allowed to go back. Everybody was evacuating. So there I was at the depot.
Now the depot would be Britannia Barracks.
Britannia Barracks.
Now what was it like at Britannia Barracks? I know you commanded it later on, but what was it like then?
Oh, it was a hive of activity. Training, and also we had Nelson Barracks all in all one thing, and it was recruit training and endless drafts and people on postings.
And what were you doing there?
Waiting to, hoping to, by then the three TA battalions had formed and they were training in Norfolk, and I was told, oh boy, what you're going on now is a motor contact officer's course, which is a kind of officer DR at Sandhurst, with a view to going back to the one or other of the battalion or the brigade headquarters at Sheringham, I think it was. So I went on this course.
What was it like? Can you explain what the course was?
The course was intensive motorcycling, which, of course, to a young officer was great, cross-country motorcycling, and really high-powered map reading. You had to be good at it, in the dark and all that kind of reading a map under a torch. And I thought, good, I've done. I was head up, now, what was his name? Moldy Moulton, famous Marine, became a general later, was the chief instructor. He said, Dylan, you are posted to the 1st Armoured Division. I said, sir, I want to go back to my regiment, albeit... No, you and that other fellow have done rather well on this course. The 1st Armoured Division needs 2 infantry subalterns. I have selected you because you've done well. I said, sir, I do not want to go and, I'm not a cavalryman, I don't want to go and strut around with my putties on upside down with a lot of... Anyway, I was over, you did what you were told in those days. I found myself headquarters, 1st Armoured Division at Dorking. And you would never, it must have been the biggest collection of snobs in the British Army. The 10th Hussars, the 9th Lancers, the Cancelled London Yeomanry, the Gloucester Hussars, you name it. However, they made me very welcome. And
in what way were they snobbish?
The cavalry, tend to be a bit, and they really were. I mean, they were so rich and rare compared with us poor bloody infantry. I mean, they were all immaculate uniforms and servants and grooms, and they lived like lords. Well, half of them were lords. It appeared to be.
Were they competent officers? Underneath this?
One didn't know. One found out later. Some were. Many were not. They were all very brave. I mean, later in the desert, one got to realise that.
Now, you joined this division at Dorking.
At Dorking.
And you were the motor contact officer, were you?
Or? Yes. I and another fellow, whose name I forget, there were two of us. I think he disappeared. I don't think he stayed.
So what were your...
I was very much... General Willoughby Norrie was the general. You were part of his staff. And he used me as his sort of personal messenger. Well, on exercises, you were... What used to happen those days, communications were poor, radio stuff. Orders were given out verbally, and then confirmation in writing was the cry. Now, this might be in the middle of the night, and there were regiments scattered all over the south of England. Confirmation in writing was by hand of officer to officer. That's what you had to do, and find the bloody place. There were no signposts, remember, no lights, and this regiment would be somewhere up a farm track in the next county. So you had to be quite good at it. And that was one on training. And then ordinary there, Willoughby Norrie had a lot of business in London. And he always had a dispatch for the War Office. And Dylan, will you take this to the War Office, Department so-and-so, on your motorbike, whiz up, you see. And there, boy, very unlikely, he used to thrust 10 shillings in my hand, you ought to give yourself a good lunch. He was a marvellous old boy.
What was it? It's Willoughby Norris.
Norrie.
What was he like?
Well, he was charming. And he became Governor General of Australia afterwards. But he wasn't a sort of Monty chap. He was a old-fashioned cavalryman, much more at home on a horse than a tank. Anyway, he took us to Egypt.
Did he come across as a reasonably competent general?
Well, you see, when you're that age as a subaltern, you assume anybody must be competent. It took me a long time to discover. I was quite an old man before I discovered the fact you were a general and didn't necessarily mean you were competent.
And how you'd gone to Dorking, what month? I should have asked that earlier.
Now, where are we? It was...
Sounds like June-ish, but...
June, July, and then we went off... Now, when did we go? When did we embark for Cairo, for Middle East? Towards the end of the year. The date escapes me. That'll be, that's in military history. 1st Armoured Division would be easily found out.
And what preparations were, what do you remember the preparations for embarkation? It's quite a big thing taking a division.
Oh, yes.
What do you remember of the preparations?
Well, at my level, not very much other than packing your kit and the tanks all went off and, by rail. And then we went out on the Empress of Australia. Complete with wartime, pre-war dining room and drink and every... You've no idea what luxury we travelled in. And we got to... I remember we got to Durban, where normally ships stopped for 3 or 4 days. You could have a run ashore. We were there for 6 weeks because the month before the Georgic, which was a similar liner, had been bombed at Suez and sunk. And there was an edict issued that no big ships would go north of Durban. So we had a most marvellous 6 weeks in Durban whilst they found some smaller ships to embark.
What was it like?
Durban?
Yes, what sort of thing did you get into?
Oh, God. The Durban girls were out of this world, I tell you. And even as a subaltern, you thought, well, what about money? I mean, you had this field cash book and you were allowed to cash £50 a month or something. Well, that soon went. And I remember going to the bank once and said, I want some money. How much do you want, sir? I said, well, I don't know. How much do you let me have? He said, well, as much as you like. You're all going out to Egypt. You'll all get killed, so it doesn't really matter. Have as much as you like and enjoy yourself. And it was absolutely marvellous. And I have a memory. Remember the Repulse and the Renown that were sunk? The Repulse was our escort battleship. Or was it the Renown? Anyway, whichever battleship it was came into port with us, or lay off. I can't remember if she came in or lay off. On the way down, we challenged her, the 1st Armoured Division, challenged Repulse to a football game. Well, I played soccer. Most of the officers didn't play soccer. I wasn't good enough to play, but they said, would I like to referee? I did. I forget what the score was, but I've got this vivid memory of this football match, glorious weather, and the ship's company and half the armoured division all watching. And that was the last ever seen the Repulse gone. That's one of those sort of memories of...
What about the South Africans? So were they very hospitable?
Absolutely marvellous, because they were the British element of Durban, were the not the Dutch one. They were the British.
How did their hospitality show itself?
Endless, anything you wanted, absolutely anything you wanted. And I met this marvellous girl. Where's my wife? She know anyway. She met her eventually, and she. And the family couldn't, absolutely superb. And I thought, I know the Royal Sovereign, my brother was a Royal Marine, was escorting the next convoy out. I happen to know that. So I thought, I'll give my brother Desmond a good turn. I gave this girl a note for Lieutenant Dillon, RM, when the Royal Sovereign came in. So there was the whole ship's coming. They'd been at sea for about 3 months, leaning over the rail. She was alongside at Durban. A big black open Cadillac with a black chauffeur and white sidewall tires, and this glorious blonde stepped out. And there was a Royal Marine sentry at the gangway. He said, can you send this note up to Mr. Dillon? Well, the captain, there was nobody meeting the captain. And anyway, he was offered the hospitality of the town, which was rather nice. That was Durban. That's in a sort of nutshell.
Now, what ship did you go on from? Did you spend Christmas at Durban?
No.
Was it before or after?
It was before Christmas. It was a Bibby liner, one of the small. I can't remember. Honestly, can't remember.
But a small one.
Small ship.
And anything about that trip?
No, it was uneventful.
But where did you land?
At Port Said.
And what were your first impressions of North Africa?
All that shit and them flies. I could tell you a World War story about that. 4th Battalion, Royal Northern Regiment, Battle of Gaza and all that. They get to Jerusalem, don't they? A chap who used to help when we lived in Norfolk on the Garden, he'd been a soldier in the 4th Battalion, he'd survived. And I said, survived all that across the desert. I said, what do you think of Jerusalem? He said, I can't think what all the fuss was about. All that shit and them flies and all them men dead. Private eye view of Jerusalem.
Then what happened when you landed it?
Then we went into under canvas at Amarea, which is west of Alexandria. It was a sort of transit camp, became a transit camp. And we collected, I remember, endless fatigue parties down to the docks, unloading and collecting stores. And eventually we trundled off into the desert, where we were absolutely hopeless, of course. We didn't know what the hell was.
Anything, nothing, you weren't to Amarea long then?
No. Just to assemble, really.
And what happened when you moved into the desert? Whereabouts were you going?
Well, we were just moving into the desert to train, and of course we knew absolutely nothing.
Whereabouts into the desert?
Towards Mirza Matru and up that way. And, of course, we were totally untutored. I mean, I consider myself quite a desert expert now, but we knew nothing then. We were continually getting bogged down, engines overheating. All the troubles they say they're suffering from now, the sand in the filters and all that kind of stuff, which we learnt the hard way. And then...
What sort of solution did you come up with, or did you not in that early
We
phase?
Did. Well, there were two things which could be used today. You strip and clean automatic weapons at least twice a day. You clean fuel filters every time you halt. And it ended up that a driver was on a charge if he had a petrol stoppage. Don't blame the manufacturer, don't blame the kid. Your bloody fault, mate. Your filter is blocked. You should clean it or change it. You're on a charge. And now they go out, they've seemed to have forgotten all that. Rifle, they say their rifles jam. Well, we discovered that. You clean your rifle, you do not oil it. You put a little graphite grease on, that's all. Otherwise it gets dust and sticks. Elementary, but it's extraordinary how these lessons have all been forgotten.
What are the things? I mean, things like desert driving, I mean, it's not that easy. I mean,
not at all, no. There are all sorts of tricks one... I mean, particularly when I got to SAS days, when I became a real expert
on driving. We'll perhaps talk about that.
About desert conditions and how to go across country and letting your tires down and all that sort of thing. And driving at night when there's dew on the ground so it doesn't... You know, it hardens the sand, that kind of thing.
What were the problems of driving in the desert that you'd face then? I mean, so in other words, we'll talk about how you evaded them.
Well,
what did you notice about
the first thing is you needed to study what we call the going. Desert isn't just one sort of thing. There's rocky desert, there's sandy desert, there's gravel desert, there's... And the LRDG and the mapping people have produced, we discovered them there, what they call going maps, which showed hard sand or soft sand, or study that very carefully. And don't think you can just charge across a sand dune. You can't. You've got to go round and all that sort of thing. It's a great skill of knowledge which the Eighth Army, of course, did acquire.
Now, what equipment did you have in the First Armoured Division?
the battle tank was a Crusader.
What did you think of it? I mean, I know you're only a second lieutenant, you know, but...
The Crusader was a sports car, really. It was too lightly armoured and inadequately armed, but very fast. It had a two-pounder gun, which was beautiful. It's like a nice shotgun, but that's about all. We tried it, German tanks from any range. You could not penetrate the front armor from 200 yards back to 1,000 yards. No.
And were you aware at the time that these tanks were?
No. We thought they were marvelous. We didn't know anything else.